This is Passing Judgment, a podcast about the law and how it affects you. I'm your host, Loyola Law School professor Jessica Levinson. Think of me as your personal law professor as we navigate the big legal questions of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers. Hey, everybody, it's Jessica. And today I want to focus on education and specifically education under the Trump administration. And so we're lucky enough to have Jonaki Mehta. Jonaki is a reporter covering education for NPR. She's covered discrimination against students with disabilities, the ongoing crisis of chronic absenteeism in American schools, and how a group of elementary schoolers banded together to get an inclusive playground for their campus. Before coming to NPR's education desk, Jonaki was a producer for All Things Considered. Jonaki went to UCLA, where she hosted a news and cultural radio talk show. She's worked for Marketplace, LAist, and for a number of outlets as a freelance producer and reporter. I really hope you enjoy this conversation. It helped me in figuring out just what does the Department of Education do and not do? How will the cuts be felt? And what is the Trump administration asking schools to do? So here's our conversation. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe. Jonaki, thank you so much for being here, for passing judgment with us. And obviously, there's so much news lately about the Department of Education, and I think a lot of misunderstanding about what's actually happening here. So I hope we can start at the most basic level, which is, what does the Department of Education do?
Yeah, great question. And thank you so much for having me. Let me actually start answering that question by first telling you what the Ed Department isn't and what it doesn't do. Mm-hmm. It does not determine what gets taught in classrooms. There are actually strong laws against that very thing. And that's up to states and districts. What the Ed Department does do is it sends about 10% of the money that goes to the nation's schools. The rest comes from states and local governments. But the money that the feds do send schools includes what are called title grants, like for English language learners, for example. But the biggest title grant is Title I. You might have heard of it. That's money that is aimed at low-income students and reaches nearly 90% of districts in the U.S. There's also IDEA, which is both a law protecting the rights of students with disabilities. And there's also money attached to that. So that's also a grant that goes to schools to help them serve students with disabilities. And then the Ed Department provides guidance to state and local leaders related to how to follow, you know, various education laws. And it investigates civil rights violations. Those are kind of some of the key things. And then with higher education, the department also manages federal student loans and FAFSA, which is a form that gives students access to college financial aid. So hope I covered that. Hope that wasn't too much, but.
No, that's extraordinarily useful. And it strikes me that all of those things are important in the sense of we're talking about making sure that kids in lower socioeconomic areas are able to obtain an education, that you can obtain an education regardless of disability, that there are certain baseline floor protections when it comes to disabilities and civil rights. And I know that we talk a lot about trying to, you know, quote, eliminate the Department of Education mm-hmm. or cut the funding. So mm-hmm. now that you've listed all of the things that the Department of Education does and doesn't do, which I also think is really important to get a handle on, you know, what exactly it means, because the name itself can sound broader than what it is. Can you talk to us a little bit about the recent cuts? I know you've reported on this, obviously, for NPR, but what are those cuts? How are they felt?
Yeah, so half the workforce at the Education Department was laid off in recent weeks. And, you know, it was already one of the smallest cabinet agencies that employed around, like, 4,100, a little over that, people at the start of the year. Now it's closer to like 2,100. That includes people who took early retirement or buyout options. But essentially, every division of the Ed Department was affected by the layoffs. And Some of the offices that were hardest hit were the Office for Civil Rights, the Office of the General Counsel, and the Institute of Educational Sciences, which is the research arm of the Ed Department. And all those offices played major roles in what the department does. So a lot of it, the work that I sort of described earlier, has been hampered pretty severely. I'm happy to answer kind of how those cuts are felt, but I don't know if what I've said so far is, if you want to jump in or, yeah.
No, that would be really useful to figure out because, again, I think when people hear, Office of General Counsel, Civil Rights, it sounds, generally speaking, important, but I always have the sense that it's hard to figure out exactly how that affects people's daily lives. So if you could help talk to us about what does that mean on the ground? What are some examples here of how that funding is felt?
Yeah, so some of these policies and recent actions are going to take a little while to trickle down to the local level in some cases not so much. So let me start with what will be or has already been felt by a lot of people, which is the Office for Civil Rights that I mentioned. These were some of the folks that were responsible for investigating cases of discrimination that students face. And the biggest share of the cases that they, the complaints that they received historically in recent years has been students with disabilities. And so a lot of, I've spoken to lawyers and I've spoken to families, people who already had their cases being investigated. Many of those have been halted. 7 of the 12 regional offices that OCR had around the country have been shut down. Half of their staff are gone. So this is, I think one of the more immediate impacts, I should say, or some of the more immediate sort of effects that are going to be felt by people who are, interacting directly with the Ed Department. I will say OCR was sort of already stretched thin. Complaints were lagging through the system. So I think a lot of people who are in favor of the restructuring happening at the Ed Department, some of the sentiment behind that is that the federal government, they feel wasn't doing enough, was taking too long. So maybe this restructuring is going to somehow help streamline some of that stuff. And then I'm happy to also just talk about one of the things I've been following is the funding we were talking about. So the Ed Department sends, as I mentioned, money to low-income schools, to rural schools, and a lot of the folks, the statisticians and the data experts at the Ed Department, almost all of them are gone now. And they were the ones responsible for crunching the numbers that would help determine which districts and states were eligible for this money. The folks I spoke to there said they're pretty confident that that money is going to get to schools for the 25-26 school year. A lot of that has sort of already been allocated. They're really worried about what's going to happen in the 2026-27 school year. So yeah, I think those are just a couple of examples.
So this is really helpful in trying to think through the short-term impact and the Office of Civil Rights and the funding cuts and the fact that this was already one of the smallest departments, I think is worth remembering for all of us, because I know nobody's in favor of waste, fraud, or abuse. Nobody's in favor of, an inflated government. But I think it's important to remember, which departments were already running comparatively leanly. And so if you could play out for us, I think listeners will say, well, they're worried about, basically, I just heard you say they're worried about 2026, 2027. Can you flesh that out a little bit in terms of a lot of people listening either have kids who are going to public schools or siblings or friends, or, name somebody who doesn't know somebody with a child going to public school. What does that mean in the classroom? What does it mean in the classroom for, comparatively wealthier districts? What does it mean in the classroom for districts that are struggling financially?
Yeah. So, I want to be careful and I don't want to cause too much alarm because while the data experts I spoke to were really concerned, they're in the weeds. They're the ones who right now would be starting to work with state and local leaders to get the data they need to make sure that, the money's going to be sent appropriately to the places that need it most. we don't know what's going to happen between now and in the next few months. There could be a lot of different avenues that a department takes with getting money to school districts. It certainly doesn't look like it's going to happen in the same way it's happened historically. But if that money were to be threatened, and if we're just playing this out, I think it's important to remember, like, schools and districts in more populated areas or wealthier areas, they're going to have a stronger property tax base. That's how a lot of schools get their money. State funding plays a big role. They might be largely okay. If you're looking at a Title I school, that's a school that is, you know, pretty reliant on these federal funds. Districts use their money to pay for staff. That's the number one thing they use their money for. So that's something that's going to be affected. IDEA funds, that's, you know, money that goes from the federal government to serve students with disabilities. That money is used to hire, you know, paraprofessionals to get services that a student might need to be on equal footing with their non-disabled peers. And so, again, this money is really aimed at leveling the playing field, like I'm saying, for lower income kids, for kids with disabilities. And so in the classroom, that could mean bigger class sizes. That could mean fewer staff to sort of get students what they need to do well in school.
So it sounds like in this area, as in so many areas, the funding cuts will not be felt equally, and that there will be a different impact on schools, Title I schools, as you mentioned, and on specific students who rely on, who may have disabilities and rely on this type of funding. So I think that brings us maybe to the why. We've talked about what the Department of Education does. We've talked a little bit about the impact that funding cuts would have. And I think people listening, many would think, well, it sounds like that's money that is going to important causes and important purposes. So could you help us understand the rationale behind the cuts?
Yeah. So, you know, if we just zoom out a little bit, President Trump has said for a long time he wants to eliminate the department altogether. These moves are kind of in working towards that goal. And he technically can't do that without Congress. He can't eliminate the whole department. Even some of the programs he's recently said he would move to other agencies, Congress would need to approve those moves. And something I'll point out is this administration has repeatedly said that they want to close the department down and send education back to the states. Education has always been with the states in the sense that they get to decide what gets taught in schools. They also largely fund education, as we've talked about. And so it's been a bit unclear what sending education back to the states really means. And at the same time, the Trump administration has actually, you know, you could argue, been involving itself in the business of schools more than past administrations. Like, you know, an example I might give is the recent letter they sent just yesterday to state leaders saying that if they don't end DEI programs, that they wouldn't receive Title I funds.
So what I hear is maybe some tension between the idea of returning schools and education, quote unquote, to local control, even though that largely has been the purview of states, and the idea that the federal government wants to have more involvement with respect to diversity initiatives, let's say. Can you talk to us a little bit more about what exactly the Trump administration is saying with respect to these diversity initiatives, and how school leaders are reacting?
Yeah, so there have been a few different sort of iterations of the Ed Department warning higher ed institutions, K through 12 schools about diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. They've already targeted certain employees, even at the federal level, who are involved in DEI programs. So this is really like a key sort of wide-ranging goal of the Trump administration is to get rid of these programs. On Thursday, the Education Department sent state leaders a letter saying that they have to sign and get back to the Ed Department within 10 days from when it was sent, certifying that they are not violating civil rights law according to how this administration defines civil rights laws. They haven't been super clear about what is a violation of the law to them. but they've given some examples that provide some clarity. So they say that schools are allowed to observe historical events like Black History Month, so long as all students are allowed to be a part of the events. So say like if a school hosted a Black History Month event only for Black students, that would be considered a violation. And if, according to this letter yesterday, if schools were to violate the law, they could have Title I funding taken away. So that's kind of just one example. And a lot of this is messaging that's been sent to schools, and we have yet to see sort of, at least at the K through 12 level, how the administration will follow through on this threat.
Well, that's important to help us think about what exactly is being said by the administration. And I think maybe some lack of clarity that school leaders are facing in terms of exactly how to comply. I want to wind down our conversation with a question that's actually really broad, which is, you're covering the Department of Education. I think you have an understanding of what it does better than at least 98% of the public. And you're following all of these changes that the Trump administration is currently seeking to make or making. Is there something else that you wish people understood about the federal government, the Department of Education? And I mean, again, what it does, what it doesn't do, what might happen, you know, is there a story which you wish more people understood about what exactly is happening here?
Yeah, I think it's something we started our conversation with, actually, is just reminding folks that the Education Department does not control what gets taught in schools. And, you know, there's been a narrative around wokeness being promoted by the Education Department in America's schools. Actually, the Bush administration had passed No Child Left Behind, and the successor to that, the sort of reauthorized version of that under the Obama administration, put laws in place to basically ensure that the federal government would not have a role in what gets taught in classrooms. So I think that's really important for people to know. I also, in my reporting, you know, I've been trying to figure out this big question of efficiency that the Trump administration is pushing in terms of cutting these programs. And a lot of the people I spoke to who were working on programs already with schools that were, you know, in classrooms to help close the student achievement gap, for example, technology that was being introduced in schools to you know, address student achievement goals. Some of those programs were cut, you know, while they were already being implemented. That was money that was already being spent. And according to the people working on these programs, they felt like that was actually a huge waste of money because so much work had already been done to sort of roll out these programs, and then they were cut short. So I think those are two things that come to mind.
Well, Chinaki, this has been really helpful in trying to get us to be able to wrap our heads around what is happening with this important department, what it means, what it doesn't mean, and looking forward to the immediate future and long term. So I want to thank you so much for your reporting and so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.